What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Don't look at me like a criminal. I'm just a chick trying to find my way. I know that time's so critical. I'm gonna save the world another day. Cause I got a lot to learn, lots of places to see. And this is what I deserve. I wanna live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I'm only trying to find my way. Don't look at me like a criminal. You're not alone, we ain't got bills to pay. And though the times are critical, I'm gonna save the world another day. Cause I got myself to love, plenty of people to meet. So if I crash and burn, at least I live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yes, 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 we are back, we are back, we are back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this evening we have a wonderful guest. As you know, this month we are doing a special where we are paying homage to black mothers in our community here in Montreal. And we have another mother with us this evening, and her name is Sarah Bay. She is formerly known as 500SL and then Sarah Chaline Mean Machine. She built her identity over the years, but it was not until 2017 that she adopted the name Sahel, a name that quickly became the fruit cocktail that made up of her cultural origins, her family history, and her experience as a woman, daughter, mother, and sister. Having lived in several corners of the planet, she carries with her the baggage of several nations. All this causes an identity upheaval that led Sahel to explore, but above all else, to accept her rap, poetry, the languages she speaks, English, French, and Creole. As a woman on the hip-hop scene, she articulates her experiences in many languages and in various forms. Sarel got her start like most teenagers her age, well, when she was younger, sitting on the floor in her bedroom imitating popular rappers of the time. Very quickly, she stood out from her peers, thanks to her cutting words, her versatile style, and her colorful personality. She launched into radio, CISM 89.3, Mesure Drastique, with DJ Drastic and Sonza. She hosted shows and began her first project of 12 songs with the production company Radisson in 1999. She participated in the first and second album of the group Rain Men and at the Francofolie Festival in Montreal. The Haitian Revolution was not won in a day, and certainly not without its pitfalls. She finds herself a few years later, alone, without a song project or a DJ, with two beautiful children and music that overflows with life lessons. She seeks to share her music with the whole world and relaunch her career in 2022 with her... Well, she relaunched her career back in 2012 with her Gift Tape project, and since then went from project to project. Sarel is weaving a web which she hopes will empower her when she shares her story on a larger scale. Just to mention as well, she's also a YouTuber currently with Pillow Talk with Sarel Bay that you can go ahead and follow. Sarel, thank you so much for being here. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure to be here with you all.
No problem. I believe this is the first time you're with Soul P, so, you know, welcome for the first time as well.
Thank you.
So we've been experiencing this whole pandemic, 2020, 2021, and most of 2022. So far, we've been in this pandemic-y situation. Now, since March, you know, things have been opening up. People are talking about we're not wearing masks as much. I personally am still going to be wearing my mask outside. I think it's not a good idea to be unmasked. But for 2020 and 2021, it was really, really trying for most folks. How was it for you? Because you are a single mom, you have two teenage kids. How was that experience for you?
I would say I went through a series of phases. I think in the beginning, like most people, I was in shock. You know, I was working and it was the first time hearing that the NBA had shut down, the whole world was shutting down, everybody was working from home. So in the very, very beginning, I think the first 3 weeks I was in panic mode, you know, following the news, all those things. So that was the hardest time for me, having to distance myself from my relatives. And I started asking myself questions like, is it okay to not be there for your relatives? Like, you're telling me that this virus can come through and then God forbid my dad or someone close to me catches it, and I would have to actually distance myself because I would be afraid to catch something. But I'm like a ride or die type of person, especially for the people who are close to me. So that was a very difficult thing to accept. And I was like, I don't think I was in my mind, I was like, I would be the type to still go. Like, you couldn't tell me I wouldn't take care of my dad. Like, I'd be the one of those people that'd be like, I'll take the risk.
Right.
So all sorts of questions came about. And then after a while, I think slowly but surely, I got into my own zone, which is when around the time that I started communicating more online, building my own show, sharing my voice with the world, or at least with my community, that started happening more and more. And then slowly but surely, I had to make a decision, you know, to respect different choices, different people. So you've just mentioned, for instance, you want to keep wearing the mask, and I respect that. I'm one of those who doesn't. But of course, I always respect someone's preference, right? I'm going to make sure the person is comfortable. So that's something that's really important to me. And I've grown to accept things, not argue with people so much, because everybody has their own experience. Some people have lost relatives that were very close to them. Some people are dealing with people who are more fragile. Everybody has their own reality. So it helped me, I'll say, find my own space and also learn to interact with people and accept the fact that we don't all agree, but we can agree to disagree and still, you know, live comfortably.
So, I just feel that if we look at the numbers in terms of, like, forget about COVID, but in terms of, like, the flu, you know, how many people actually caught the flu this season? It's still there. It's still there. It's actually killed more people over the years than COVID has. But like, I haven't had the sniffles in a long time. And the other day I was getting like a little itch in my throat, and I just stayed away from work, took my medicine, my home remedy stuff. And within a day it was gone, you know? And I attribute that to people, you know, washing their hands and this hand sanitizers being present everywhere. And also people wearing the mask, especially in enclosed spaces. Like, when I'm outside, I take off my mask because I could only do so much. But when I'm in an enclosed space, especially with people that I don't interact with on a regular basis, bro, I'm wearing the mask, you know, and I would appreciate it if everybody did, but I also understand, you know, people have different experiences. I mean, throughout the pandemic, I was working in a space whereby we had to wear the mask 100% of the time. So I'm kind of used to it. Other folks had the privilege of working from home, you know, so, you know, they didn't have to wear masks until they went outside. So it was more of an inconvenience or an inconvenient feeling for them. But for me, it's just like, bro, let's just, I'm protecting you by wearing the mask. Like, people want to say, oh, I'm protecting myself. Not really. Like, if someone has the flu or has the virus and they cough on you, even if you're wearing the mask, if that gets in your skin is your biggest organ. It absorbs everything. You know, that's why we have to be careful what we put on our skin, be careful of the products that we use. because it absorbs everything and you're still going to get sick. But yeah, and you also have teenagers. So how is that experience? I mean, aside from the fact that they're going through all of these hormonal changes and probably getting attitude already and whatever, whatever teenagers go through, because each teenager is different, but now they're locked in a house for X amount of time.
I think they kind of took it at their own pace. I think they also went through their own sort of evolution because, and again, this is sort of something that happened to us collectively, but everyone has his or her own experience with the virus or with the changes, the restrictions, how they feel about it. Everybody's different on that level. So I sort of had to let them grow and go through their own phases without imposing my views on them while still remaining the, what I mean? So it was interesting to see them. I had a lot of conversations with them. You know, we would sit down, do, you know, check up. What do you think about this? How are you feeling? And sometimes they had their days, I'll say, especially with my daughter, where, you know, constantly looking at all the things that she was missing out on.
Right.
You know, we're talking graduation. We're talking, because a lot of times, depending on the child's personality, some girls especially were preparing for their prom since they entered high school.
Right.
They were already saying, I'm going to have this kind of dress, or I'm going to do this, and this is what's going to happen. So seeing all those plans be completely, you know, thrown off, that was also something that she had to deal with. And I had to deal with the fact that I could be there and give advice, but that's all I can do. The advice is just advice. Exactly. And the fact that I wasn't going through it, depending on how it's received, it might just be like, yeah. Did you have a graduation? Was there COVID during your graduation? Okay, thank you.
Wow.
You know, no, it wasn't that bad.
But it's the reality. It's the reality.
Expect exact, because it's the truth, right? Mm-hmm. So you're giving people advice, but you're not really in their shoes going through what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some cases where I would think it would be worse. Like a lot of times I would look at them and like my son, he was doing his thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in his room, he's playing PlayStation, they're all connected. You know, he was doing his own thing sometimes. And when my daughter found her balance, she was doing her own thing. Right. Then I began feeling kind of lonely. I was like, oh my gosh.
And how old are they?
Now they are 15 and 18.
Okay. So your son is 15 and your daughter's 18.
Exactly.
Wow.
So yeah, and the homeschooling,
school from
remotely.
Home. Yeah, remote.
Exactly. That was something as well, because I had to then, I'm more old school, right? And I'm not, I think the schools kind of dropped the ball, and I understand because there was so much confusion, but still little things like making sure every child has his or her camera on would have made a world of difference.
Okay.
Right. It's simple, but to have the school say you don't have to turn your camera on, I'm sorry, yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Right, because you need to be present.
If you turn your camera off, you could be sleeping, you could be texting, doing God knows what.
Mm-hmm.
But all I know is chances of you paying attention to the class, they're very slim. I mean, those are teenagers, right? So then I had to go in and be like, get up. You know, and they're like, oh, my class is in 5 minutes, still sleeping, put on the alarm 3 minutes before class starts. Oh, man. It was something.
Right. I know a little bit about that, doing these lives that I've been doing and stuff like that. And sometimes because I used to work nights, I'd like put an alarm 15 minutes before the live starts, because I'm just exhausted, you know? So I can relate on that level, but you know, I'm an older man. I need my rest.
Thank you, right? You're not exhausted from playing PlayStation.
Right. So. Exactly. So what I find that interesting, because when I talk to people, especially about children, not necessarily on the show, I say that like people are worried about children and the way the lack of social interaction and stuff like that. And I say, if you look at every generation of children, we adapt to whatever our situation is. Our generation, the late 30-somethings to the early 40-somethings, we grew up in the 80s. We were introduced to the first, like, video games that were at home. For some people who remember, it was Atari was, like, the first big thing, and then Nintendo just came and just took over the business, and then Sega Genesis, and then PlayStation, and Sony, and we were introduced to the internet. We remember, you know, that dial-up where you had to have two phone lines because someone was always on the internet tying up the phone, you know, and we adapted to that, you know, and the children are, like, I think about young children, like, things like wearing masks, maybe in the beginning they'll be resistant, but after a while they're just like, it's normal. It's going to be their norm. Like, we lived 30 plus, sometimes 40 plus years without having to worry about wearing masks or anything like that. But their shorter lifespan, it will become normal to them. And doing remote stuff, yeah, in the beginning it's difficult, but after a while it becomes a norm for them. So, and I look at shows like Black Mirror, and I'm like, all of these shows are so relevant. Like, I mean, I keep talking about the fact that back in the 70s, Star Trek was doing Zooms. Like, if you think about it, Star Trek was doing Zooms. They had the big screen. They were talking to the other ship via big screen. And, you know, they would mute it so that they could, you know, talk to each other and conspire together. Yes. Like, they were doing all of that on Star Trek. So it's only natural that now we're basically doing the same thing in a different format, smaller screens, and we're adapting. And children, I believe, are the most adaptable people. Like, it becomes normal for them to do, to live like this.
I think, yeah, human beings definitely adapt, but I think it depends on what you're adapting yourself to.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it, depending on the turn that the world is taking or might take, I can adapt to a different diet. I can adapt to, I don't know, being cursed out every day by a parent who's toxic, let's say. I mean, I'm going to extremes. But
that's
just
a reality,
say, like,
right? Because it's
a reality.
Being locked up with toxic parents and you don't have that relief, that's something that people may have gone through. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I would say, yes, we adapt, but we still need to watch out what we are adapting ourselves to. Also, based on, I always say we are our own scientific experiment. Okay. Like, you have your perspective. You are you, you know, based on how you grew up, what your belief system is, the experiences that you went through sort of shaped you into and molded you into the person that you are. Same for me, same for every single individual. So we all have our own things happening. And this is where it becomes difficult to sort of, I think this is why what we went through was such a big challenge, because on one end you had, let's say, mainstream media telling us this is what you're supposed to do because this, that, that. And you have other people who inside their bodies, their fields, their DNA, their you know, their scientific experiment was telling them, no, I reject this because I don't want to do it, or this is not good for me, or I don't believe in that. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of something that happened and shook everything up. So everybody had to, like, sort of learn to say, okay, well, this is how this person feels. And a lot of also other things came to light. Some of the ways the government, some of the ways the media, some different things came to light that people didn't know about. So there's all this going on in the world at the same time. And it's our, we are now put in a situation where we have to maneuver with all that's happening, with the overload of information. So when we're saying adapt, I think there's definitely, I would always recommend that we refer back to who we are, right? Okay. Your own scientific makeup, right?
Okay.
But yeah, there's definitely a lot of that to consider.
Yeah. What do you think was, was there anything that was difficult for your kids to adapt to during the pandemic?
I think the changes were definitely annoying because in the schools, for instance, like even me watching from the outside, they would come back and say, okay, now everybody's working from home. And they'll say they lent certain children laptops. The school, that's why there's like a laptop shortage because all the schools were buying up all the laptops. So they were like, okay, here's your laptop for school, blah, 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 blah. If you need one, you get the laptop. A week later, everything changes. Bring the laptops back. Okay, we bring them back. Then a week after, 2 weeks later, oh no, we're doing back to. So it was never like, okay, we're making a decision to, you guys are gonna study from home, period. We're gonna do that until the end of the year. It wasn't that. They sort of went with the back and forth. Legault or whoever said, okay, we're opening up the schools, they're open. 2 weeks later, we close them. So it was a lot of back and forth, in my opinion, that could have been avoided. So, okay, we already made the decision. We already distributed the laptops. Let's continue with this for at least, okay, maybe not till the end of the year, but maybe for the next 3 months. And then on spring break, we're going to switch everything up. Just move intelligently and be more delicate. But instead of that, it was a lot of confusion, which also made the teachers confused.
I
And
can
a lot
imagine,
of them, I think it was my daughter telling me that every single, I think in most of her classes, she had teachers who went on burnouts. Then they had to switch. A new teacher comes on, couldn't find a teacher, so they took someone who whose academic background was closely related. So this is public school experience. It was probably different in a private sector, but in a public school sector, this is what was happening, at least for our experience. And so there was a lot of like back and forth, a lot of changes. A lot of teachers were like losing their minds. We're talking teachers, like there's one event where the director of the school, a woman, walks in, and there they have a dress code, right? They have to wear polo tops and bottoms, right?
Oh, in public school.
Yeah, they have like a dress code and certain colors that they can wear. So the teacher walks in, and for a long time, since there was a lot of back and forth, they were more laid back on a lot of the rules and regulations in a school, the ones that did not have anything to do with COVID. So children came in dressed as they wanted. There was a little, they sort of let go a bit. So the director walks in, she's furious. She sees all the children dressed up in different colors. She threw a fit. She went nuts until one of the children raised her hand and told her, ma'am, today is une journée couleur, meaning that it's an official day in the school where everybody were supposed to be able to dress however they wanted. This is something that's decided by the school. But the principal, that's the word I was looking for, I kept saying director, the principal didn't know about it. That's how overwhelmed she was. So the absurdity surrounding the whole situation was just horrible. So they definitely, I think one of the good things with teenagers is that they're kind of careless on certain levels. So they're just kind of like, oh boy, oh, they were making jokes, cracking jokes about this and not falling into the crazy phase. So I think this is also, as much as we complain about teenagers, this is also a protective barrier for them, the ability to reject certain things and just be like, nah, you know what, you're off. I don't care about that. You're off. You're not going to
Yeah,
drive
you're
me
out of
crazy just
pocket.
because you're crazy. Exactly. Exactly.
Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Sahel Bey, and she is with us this evening as part of our month celebrating Black Mothers. So for the month of May, we are celebrating Black Mothers and speaking to them. And she just spoke to us a bit about how her and her family have adapted to COVID-19, this whole pandemic situation that we've had since 2021. And up till the beginning of 2022. We're going to take a quick break and play some music. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
You should just give me that. You should just give me that. Give me like all them awards. Give me that worldwide tour. Give me that brand new Accord. Give me like all that coin. Yeah. You can walk in my shoes. then you just stay for the view. Cause how I see is so cool. I don't see her, her or you. Irresistible, man, huggable, fluffy with the silly flows. Non-negotiable, wild and like an animal. Out in Istanbul, I'm a bull. Staying quiet though, I stay on the low. They can't wait for more, but you got it though. I don't control time, time might control me, but that's a rhyme for a different time and story. And I'll be just in time to sit and bask in all my glory. Everything I want is mine, for what you got for me. You should just give me that. 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 Give me like all them awards. Give me that worldwide tour. Give me that brand new Accord. Give me like all that coin. I'm a boss, yeah. I want $1 million couches just to rent in. Buy up all my family's houses. Ain't doing it here for fun. I'm a serious one. So what if I don't run my body good, good, huh? Ready to be heard. I'm feeling like I'm meant to spread the word. I'm feeling like I've rallied from my word. I'm feeling like I'm about to run the world.
This is Lukey D. Real food you want. Come to Mango Bay every day. Real food.
Mango Bay Restaurant, located in the heart of downtown Montreal, 1236 Mackay Street, Suite 201. For reservations, please call 514-875-7082 or visit mangobay.ca. Real food. Let's get together.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back once again. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. This month, the month of May, we are featuring Black mothers throughout the entire month. And here we have, tonight, we have a mother of two, an artist, rapper, poet in French and English. She's worked for several years in commercial real estate and is also a YouTuber with Pillow Talk with Sarah Bay. She grew up in Montreal, in Mali, and in Florida. Grew up with her parents and her sister, and she is a single mom. Sarah Bay.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. So let's get into motherhood and mothering. You have two beautiful children. Your eldest is 18 years old. Your youngest is 15. So let's start with what... When you first found out, no, what is your perception of motherhood? What does that mean for you?
Motherhood, I think it's something that evolves and never stops evolving. As your children grow, it transforms, at least from my personal experience. I think in the beginning, or not I think, in the beginning, I didn't really know what to expect. When I first got pregnant and had my first, well, my daughter, it was sort of like, remember when the doctor put her in my arms, I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is real. I have a being in my hand who's moving independently and I have to take care of it. So I knew this was going to happen, but I didn't know until she was in my arms. That's right. When it really became real. It was like a next step. So I think in the beginning, it's very much a lot of, I think caring stays throughout, but it transforms, right? In the beginning, you have this being that is completely dependent on you. Mm-hmm. You do everything. You're responsible for everything, or at least you think you're responsible for everything, right? What they're going to know, what they're going to be exposed to, how they're going to feel. You know, you have to respond to every single thing, every single signal that they give you, you have to respond to. And then as they grow older and they start to get into their own perspectives of the world and how they view things and what they want to do and those things, you sort of have to learn to let go while being there. And the older they get, the more you have to learn to let go and watch, observe, be there, right? So I think it's like a combination of how do you call it? Unconditional love, right? But learning that as unconditional as this love may be, you will have to learn to step back to allow them to be, because love is also allowing to be, right? And that's a very, very difficult part for me. It was difficult to accept, especially coming from the Haitian culture,
okay,
where the parents are very much, you know, they want to tell you what to do, how to sit up straight, what to do with your hair, you know, how to talk, You know, don't mix in words when you, either you're speaking French, Creole, or English. You're mixing all three. What are you saying right now?
Okay.
What are you talking about? C'est chill. What does that mean? You know, they want to control everything, right?
Right.
So, and us being from a different, so you're like, okay, I have to let my, there's slangs that are going to, so our experience here, mm-hmm. children of immigrants, mm-hmm. right? We've gone through things. So now are you going to be a hypocrite and as you grow up now give those restrictions to your children?
Interesting.
The ones that you were against?
Right.
I mean, you still have to give some, right? We're not going to let them go all out.
Yeah,
but
they can't go buck
certain
wild.
Things like, exactly. You still have to be there to sort of like, but you kind of have to say, okay, you have to remember, you have to dig into your memory and say, okay, when I was young, I did do that as well.
Right.
Was it that bad? You know what I mean?
Right.
Or was it just me experiencing life? So it's interesting.
That's interesting because I was about to ask you, what is the difference between you being a daughter and now you being a mother? But you kind of already answered that question because I always kind of go through that. Like, I was fortunate in that I didn't have a traditional family. When I watch these videos of especially the Haitian videos of the mothers, you know, throwing the slipper at the child and you know, the talking back and all of that kind of situation, I'm like, there was a little bit of it in there, but for the most part, like, my family didn't fit the stereotype.
Yeah, no, I can't say that mine did mm-hmm. that much, like, not the... But just in terms of the, because I think in the jokes, they're showing one aspect of it, but just the part of the strict, the very like, or the, and it's funny because I recently got more into TikTok videos.
Yeah. I've
seen
that.
To also explore some of those things, because it's funny, the Haitian culture and seeing how each parent uses part of those, you know, they all pick and choose from the culture, right? Because they don't all do the throwing of the slippers, but we all know we haven't. If it's not our mother, it's an auntie who does it, mm-hmm. or it's a neighbor. Like, it's there in the culture. And even as children, as we were discussing it, if you remember the times in high school where we sit in circles or in get-togethers where we talked about the Haitian mom or the Haitian dad and these stereotypes of that could go from the Haitian mom throwing slippers or from the dad or the mom telling you have to either be a lawyer, an engineer, or a doctor.
Yeah.
If not, you didn't make it in life. You're
right.
Nobody.
Right.
It's all those things that sort of come back. But I think because we went through it, we sort of give pushback to that. And we're like, okay, we're not going to do those same exact things. And they didn't mean no harm by doing it. It's just...
No.
It made sense how they were raised, but the fact that our experience is very different. We were exposed to different things
mm-hmm.
and in a different reality. I think we give a lot of pushback because of that as well.
Right. Have you as a mother, I kind of been able to identify your children's interests? Because you, in your bio, very, very young, you knew that art and expressing yourself artistically was something that was going to be a part of your life. And I'm sure you experienced a bit of pushback, if not a lot more pushback from your parents. but like, have you identified what your children are interested in and how is your reaction to that?
It's funny because I think because of what I went through, because of the pushback that I got, I tried to give them no pushback, but I still was very pushy in terms of do what you want, do what you love, do it. And maybe, and it's funny that you asked that. I think it sort of had maybe a reverse effect
mm-hmm.
where they're kind of like my daughter's interested in, like, she's good with her hands, like anything, like she can create a 3D home. Like, she's done that when she was little. She created 3D homes. And we're like, oh, my gosh, you should. And we're trying to transform it into something. And you should do this. And you should, or you could do that. Or you. So
right.
it could be just as bad. Because
right.
at some point, you might be confusing her. That's what I'm realizing now. Because she didn't choose any of those options. And she's kind of like, whoa, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool, but I'm just doing it like I'm not passionate. I just enjoy like doing
this. This is not a lifestyle. Exactly. It's while not you're thinking, mom, oh, like, wow, she could become a designer. She could eventually make a lot of money off of being a designer and stuff like that. And she's just like, bro, let me just build my little house.
You know, exactly. So it's like the support that I feel that I didn't get. I think in some instances I tried to overdo it maybe by pushing more. And she's just like, like you said, it's not that serious. Like, we're not,
right,
you know, so it sort of had a reverse effect to a point where when I realized, I said, okay, you know what? Let me just step back, you know?
Yeah.
Let me just take a step back and let her do what she does and grow and develop into her own thing. Mm-hmm. I don't have to, it's really me wanting to, you know, the whole phrase sky is the limit or sky is not even a limit.
Mm-hmm.
I really want, because I didn't get that and I felt like I needed that push. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had to push them in that direction, but they don't want that push. So, or at least not now.
And it's ironic because it's the word that is operative is push, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Your parents were pushing you to do something that they considered to be right for them. And then now you're pushing your child to do something that you consider to be right for them. But it's the push that's the problem. It's not whether or not you support her or don't support them. It's that exactly. push part. It's so interesting because even when people think that they're not doing the same thing that the parents do, if they don't do that introspection and they don't think about what was it that caused me to feel some type of way about what my parents were doing. Was it that they were telling me to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant, or an engineer? Or was it that they were pushing me into something that I wasn't comfortable with? And, you know, it's the push. It's the push that was actually annoying. I even find that when I'm me as an adult and I'm enthusiastic about something and someone starts pushing me too much into that direction, I'm just like, whoa, let me take things at my own pace. You know, like... You know? I got to do things in my own way. I'm a grown man now, you know. And can you imagine a kid who's just trying to figure out how to orient themselves? That's very interesting.
Exactly. And receiving feedback from me, from the grandparents who are now trying to pick up and say, okay, we have to focus on your talent. So now they're also pushing because they're thinking maybe we didn't push our daughter to be what she really wanted to be. So right. Let me put it on. So you're getting like feedback from everyone. You should do this. You should, you. And so they're just, and a good thing also is I find my children are good at just giving it to me straight. Like my daughter will tell me like, okay, you're stressing me out. Like this is too much. Like she will tell me straight up. So then I have to be like, oh, how? She'd be like, because the more you push, you tell me, she goes, I just want to do my own thing. And maybe I'm exploring it. Maybe not. Maybe I'll change my mind, but I don't need you to be like this intense.
Right.
And so that's how I started getting it. I was like, oh, okay. Because sometimes you're not, because we mean no harm, right? Same way our parents didn't mean any harm. So we do things based on what we know, how we feel, what we might need. But what I need is not what she needs because she didn't experiment life the way I did.
Mm-hmm.
So
tell me, my son. The first time that you got pushed back from when you were pushing, what was that experience like? Do you remember it? And what was that experience like? Because there's always a part of me that I'm a young father because my child's only four. And like, I'm a bit apprehensive about that day that comes where I'm like, I feel like I just got to accept that one day I'm going to push my child to do something and my child's going to turn around and be like, yo, you need to back up. And I'm going to be like, there's a part of me, the Caribbean, because I'm Jamaican and Haitian, that's going to be like, who the do you think you're talking to? And then there's another part of me that's like, the person has gone through mental health issues, the person has gone to therapy, person that's done a lot of self-work, is going to be like, okay, this is normal. Let's figure this out. But so I'm like apprehensive about that day. But like, when that first happened, when she first, like, put her foot down type of deal and stood up to you, like, what was that experience like? How did you initially react?
I can't say I remember the specific event, like, the first time. Okay. I know it's something I had to get used to because it came very early on with my children. Like, once they left the I'm going to say baby or little child phase, once they were, like, grown, it came pretty fast. I think generally your ego for sure takes a hit. Like, you're like, oh, I'm no longer the one making all the decisions. Like, I'm getting pushback on the decisions I make as an adult. Like, what's going on? Yeah. It's like a reverse kind of role,
right?
Where you're like, what? This little one is telling me, or this not so grown one is telling me that they know what they want to do. So your ego takes a hit, but it's always like, there's always like your initial reaction, but then there's like the reaction when you're alone.
Yeah.
And when your conscience comes back and you get that minor stomach situation that's like, you know what? Maybe you didn't handle that the right way. Right. I think they were right. So me, I'm the kind of person where, like, I have to go back and be like, my bad. You know what? You're right. You're right. Cool. You know, that's not how I would do it. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't recommend it. But hey, you know what? You are you. I trust you can make that decision. Just know that this, that, and maybe offer some advice. But because it is what it is. I think we were brought up to think that children are ours, but they're not.
We are theirs.
Exactly.
Me, I believe that I am my child's bourrique. Because my grandmother used to say to me, "Bourrique fait petit poudre posé." So, for those who don't speak Creole, donkeys bear children so that they can rest their backs. But I feel, based on my experience thus far as a father, and based on also my experience with my parents, is that my parents are the donkeys that carry me until they're done carrying me, and then I carry my own. I feel like, you know, even when I believe I'm going to live until I'm 102 years old, and even when I'm 102, like, if my child comes back to me and is like, "Dad, you know, I'm going through this, this, and this," I'm going to be like, "Okay, let's figure it out together. I'm here for you, because you didn't ask." My perspective is, you didn't ask to come here. And I'm responsible for you until the end. You know what I mean? I went off on a tangent. The experience, the that time when you got that pushback and you had to.
Yeah.
But that's, I have to applaud you, because, like, not a lot of people are willing to take the time to reflect on what they say, because, like, one thing that I found really interesting, you said, when you're talking to your daughter and you were encouraging her to do this or that thing because she shows interest, and she's like, "Wait, no." And then you ask questions. You're like, "Well, why?" And then she actually, based on what you said, she actually explains why it is. And I find that too often we don't ask questions. We make assumptions. You know?
Yeah.
I am so guilty of this, and I'm sure so many of us are guilty of this. It's like,
yeah, we are.
If we were to say, someone says to us something that contradicts our thought process or our belief system, if we just say, "Well, why?" it would, like, resolve so much things, because we don't understand each other.
Yeah.
We think we understand each other, but we don't.
That's true. And I think we were also raised like that. I remember, like, I'm going to say again, Haitian culture, because that's my reference. Mm-hmm. But children, like, you couldn't ask why too much. And I get where parents do have to put a stop, because you also don't want the other extreme where you have a child questioning every single thing.
Yeah.
I think that's also, it's almost like you don't, you still have to trust your parent to a certain degree. Like, right. We can't explain and go into a big philosophical conversation about you having to put boots on in the winter.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, so, but.
And there are boundaries that you need to set up. Exactly. As a parent.
There's also, yeah. Like, you ask me a question, you can ask me why, I'll answer. Now we can't, you know, extend too much on that, but it's good to give a response. But I think back then it was like, children don't question grownups.
Right.
Yeah, we should. Because some grownups are just like, they don't know what they're doing.
They're
so,
out
yeah.
of pocket
or
too.
Some things don't make sense. Exactly. Yeah. You know, we're all human. So, and children have this light, or they have this way of questioning things that, because we're so used to just accepting, not questioning, and moving on, mm-hmm. when the first time a child asks you a question, you're kind of like, oh, it's something very simple, but you never thought of.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have the responsibility to just stop and say, like, I have an example. It wouldn't be a good example because I don't know how to translate it. But my son, when he asked a question, and I was working in a real estate field for a while, mm-hmm. and he asked me a question that I never, you know, those homes in French, we call them semi-détaché,
okay. where it's semi-detached, like
lined up, attached, semi-attached.
And they're like,
I don't know if
they're like
term.
yeah, semi-detached, like,
and
they're basically,
and they're
together,
identical.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in French it's called, semi-détaché, so mm-hmm. semi-detached,
yeah.
if I could translate it.
Yeah.
And he was very young, he was like, well, why aren't they called semi-attached? And when you think of it, and it's true, because mm-hmm. they are attached.
Right.
Every home is detached. So why would you call it semi-detached? But it's just another way of looking at it, because for him, it was like, it's my first time hearing that word. Every home is single. And now you're going to tell me semi-single or semi-detached.
Right. Yeah.
It didn't make sense to him, but it was where some, and I remember I was telling this joke to, and to me, it was just like, oh, it's funny. I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
And I told someone else, And the person was like, just tell them that's how they're called. Like, what, really? And they didn't get it, because you see how people think based on their responses. So for that person, and I don't remember who it was just like, oh, children talk too much. Like, that's just
right.
what it's called, period. Don't question it.
Right.
And that's the society that we live in. We don't question things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
that's an interesting thing for me, too, because I find that. And as a wordsmith, and you're a wordsmith as well, I'm very cognizant of words and their meanings, and we will take a word, like, for example, the word humble, and we'll use that word and we'll see it as a very positive thing. But when I looked up the original definition, I was like, I am not using that word anymore.
That's true.
Because humble is actually like you're demeaning yourself, like you're removing yourself in order to appease someone else. And I feel like the correct word is respectful. You know, is you learn respect, and you're more respectful to people as opposed to being humble. I encourage everyone to go and find out the actual dictionary definition of humble, and it'll change your mind, because we just accept humble means that you're not arrogant, that you're not self-centered, that you're not egotistical. That's not what it means at all. It is you're removing yourself, and
crazy.
We just accept that it means this. But it's like, no, we need to understand and research and question our words and question how we speak and question. Like,
it's,
I mean.
Funny.
If that was the case, then we would still be accepting the patriarchy, and we'd still be accepting that men are supposed to dominate women and all of that stuff. And if we don't question anything, there will be no positive change in order for our society to be better and better and better.
It's so true. And it's funny you brought up the word humble, because someone had told me that years ago. And as he said it to me, I received the information. I was like, oh, it's crazy, because I also knew that the word nice, same thing. Nice in the old days meant stupid. So it's kind of like the same thing.
Wow.
Queen also. And I tried to research it again, but like old English. Apparently, I remember having researched it, but I have to go back again. Apparently it meant I don't know if I can say this on the radio, the H word, or I could put the W in front.
Right. Whore. We can say it. We can,
whore. Okay. So, but when he told me that, the humble, I remember Nice and I was going to say whore. Nice and Queen, I looked them up myself, but he told me about humble. And I knew it, and I stopped using it for a while. But because I hadn't researched it myself, eventually it came back into my vocabulary. Yeah. So it's important, like you said, it's important to look it up for ourselves, because when you look it up, it's sort of like it almost like it writes it up in your brain, like you register it, mm-hmm. as opposed to just hearing it from somebody else and just going, oh, okay, because after things fade. Right. And you just move on. You go on about your life and other people start seeing it. And you're like, OK, I'm just being paranoid. Let me just do like everybody else and keep using it. No, it's important. And because we're giving our consent, especially when you know. If you don't know, you don't know. But when you know, mm-hmm. and you still do it, you're giving your consent to something. And words have meaning and they're very powerful. So
listen, I got people annoyed with me because they would tell me something. Whether it was the definition of a word, or they would explain something to me, or they would say, oh, this is a part of my culture. So, and then I'd be like, I'd accept it in the moment, but then I'd be like, I'd go on my computer and be like, is this a part of such culture? And I can't find anything. And then I'll come back to the person and I'm like, well, I didn't find any information about this. I researched it. Where did you get this from? And people would get annoyed at me because I'm not accepting, as we say, je prends pas pour acquis ce que tu m'as dit. I don't take it as fact. And we as human beings, like, I love the Snope generation, right? We used to have all of these things that we took as fact that came on the internet. Oh, if you rub this kind of ointment on your skin, then it'll be healing and blah, 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 blah. And then you go on Snope and you find out, oh, that's actually bullcrap. Or this serial killer was known throughout history and blah, 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 blah. And then you find out that it's really garbage. Somebody invented it. Fact checking has become a very big part of what I do. And sometimes I totally will see something and I'll just run with it because it just feels good. But then someone will come on my page, or I'll post something on my page, and they'll be like, well, actually, this is not true. And it's like, oh, just let me enjoy the lie. Anyway, just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Sahel Bey, who is a mother of two, artist, rapper, poet in English and French, worked for several years in commercial real estate, has a long history of love of hip-hop and performing and hosting shows, and even has a few albums out as well. We do have to take a quick break. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Orders and sense.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and with me, I am speaking to Sahel Bey, who was formerly known as 500SL, then Sarah Chaline Meme Machine, but over the years and in 2017, she adopted the name Sahel that became more fitting to her identity as a person who grew up in different places and her cultural origins. And she's also a mother of two, so it fits with our celebration of Black mothers throughout this month of May. Sahel, thank you so much for being here, and the conversation has been, we keep going off on tangents, but you know, the conversation has been really, really informative. I hope our guests appreciate it as well. So back to motherhood, so throughout this month, we're going to be talking to different people at different stages of motherhood, and being a mom of teenagers, what are some things that you have learned as a mother that perhaps you wish you knew or that you think would be valuable to share with someone who's a mom or who's becoming a mom, and still doesn't have all of that experience yet? What is something that you would share with them?
I would say that every child is different, just like every parent, every adult is different. And when you try and apply this one way technique, it doesn't necessarily work, right? Because you can have a child that you discipline a certain way, like you tell them, okay, no more chocolate for a week, and it works wonders.
Right.
And then you can have another child that you tell them no chocolate for a week, and they'll just go straight up around you, steal the chocolate from the cabinet, start selling it out of their home.
Right.
You know what I mean? You get from all extremes. So I think it's good to observe our children. And sometimes we're so caught up in our own world. And I'm speaking especially for me, as a single parent, you know, I'm running around, I was working full time, still wanting to, you know, not give up on my personal career, my artistic career, which is actually what gives me strength. You know, it's my therapy, it's my escape, it's so many things for me. So it was always important that I keep that active, right? At least for me, even if it wasn't active publicly.
Yeah.
It was active for me, like having my own studio time, recording my things, writing was very important. So I was very busy.
Yeah.
So when you get caught up and you're busy, sometimes you don't have time to observe your children, how they feel, how they react to things, how intelligent they are, how much they understand just by, because they also analyze and observe us.
Right.
Right. So right. I think as we observe them more, we can adapt to their learning abilities. It's kind of like, you know, when they talk about the languages of love.
Okay.
It's sort of the same thing. When you know somebody's love language, you can speak to them in that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's definitely one of the things that I wish I would have known or realized sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's never too late. You pick up where you messed up and you fix it and you keep moving.
Yeah.
Unconditional love both ways.
You say that you're a single parent and it's present in your bio, so you're like, it's not something that's unknown. What has been your experience like, and how do you think that has affected, like, first of all, what kind of single parent? Because there are different categories of single parenting. Like, there's single parenting where one of the parent is completely absent. There's single parent where there's a weekend parent, you know, so there's different, different styles. So if you could maybe give us a little bit of information in regards to how you consider yourself a single parent.
Sure. So their father does not live in the same province as us.
Okay.
He's in Ontario. So they would see each other maybe about twice a year. Okay. Maybe during, I think often during Christmas holidays and sometimes spring break or the summer.
Right.
It depends. So I would say about roughly twice a year. And then since COVID, they haven't seen each other physically. They so it's more of like a telephone relationship for now, or like a FaceTime sort of deal.
Okay. And how did that affect you? Like, at what point in your parenting did you become a single parent? And then, like, how did that affect you moving forward?
So it happened pretty, it happened about, okay, we got together when I was 19, got my first daughter 23, gave birth by, and then when I was 29, my daughter 23, my son at 26. And when I turned 29, towards the end of the year, we separated. Okay. So 10 years ago, we separated. So I've been single for 10 years. And so at first it was a shock. Mm-hmm. I think it was a shock because just the way things happened, there was like a huge, often describe it as an explosion,
right?
Because that's how it felt. So it was a pretty rough situation, I'll say.
Okay.
And I talk about it openly on my channel, but I might not go into deep details, but it was like a domestic violence case. So we split up, and then the authorities got involved. It became really big, right? Wow. It was a huge thing. And so I always believed, or always noticed, that the children had been impacted based on that as well, right?
Okay.
Because when you go through that, you're awakened. There's not much sugarcoating there.
Right.
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 The situation is what it is. So it was a very like, the talking points about the breakup, like the explanation came after the actual breakup.